Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Dissidents and Dictators, the flagship podcast from the Human Rights Foundation. My name is Casey Michelle, and our guest today is Anastasia Shevchenko, one of the leading voices of the Russian opposition movement. You may be familiar with Nastia's work with the Open Russia movement, a pro-democracy nonprofit, which the Russian authorities banned in 2017. You may also be familiar with Nastia from a new documentary about her and her family called Anastasia, which was recently shortlisted for an Academy Award. We are honored to have Anastasia joining us today, so let's dive right in. First things first, Nastia, thank you so much for coming. Добро пожаловать. How are you today?
I'm good. Your Russian is great. Thank you for the invitation. I love it, really.
Gavri просто чуть-чуть. I speak only a little bit, к сожалению, unfortunately. It's still there, but it's very rusty, unfortunately. But Nastia, you are calling in from where today? You're no longer in Russia.
No, I'm not in Russia anymore. I left the country in 2022 after the war started, and now I live in Lithuania with my family, my two children, my mom and my dog.
Two children, mom and the dog. How is the dog adjusting to the move?
Well, I think the dog saved my life because, you know, when we were crossing the border, Belarus and Lithuania border, I was very worried that they can stop me anytime and, you know, and arrest because yeah. I was on probation that time. And they paid so much attention to my dog's documents. Like it took an hour for them to check everything that they didn't pay much attention to me. And I was like so happy. So yeah, wow. I'm very grateful. And dog is very happy as well.
Oh, I'm sure the dog was very happy to have all the attention as well. What is the dog's name?
Bailey.
not a traditional Russian name, but a wonderful...
But it's traditional in general, a very popular name. Well, everybody thinks that it's a girl in Russia, mm-hmm. and you need to prove, like, no, it's a boy, because it sounds like a female name. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where the documents come into play that can show what the gender of the dog is. Well, Nasa, let's back up a little bit before you had to flee Russia for Lithuania. I actually want to go kind of a ways back. We'll talk a little bit about your career and your impact. When did you first realize? When did you first get interested in working in this kind of activist space, in this democratic space, in this organizational space? Is this something you've wanted to do from childhood? Is this something you were interested in school? Was there one person that inspired you? When did this actually begin for you?
No, I never wanted to be an activist. It's dangerous in Russia, you know, and you risk your life. So I didn't want to be an activist, but somehow it happened because there was so much injustice around me. And also imagine I'm a mom of three children. One of them is disabled and you need to fight for her rights, for medications and to survive somehow. Nobody cares about your children and you should do something when you see that there's corruption here and they didn't pre-order medication for your child and so on and so forth. And you start fighting and the authorities, they immediately say, okay, you are a mom. You should stay at home and take care of your children and stay out of politics. And I'm like, well, that's actually why I am an activist mm-hmm. now, because it's not fair what you're doing with children. But there were also many points, I would say, like it's the death of Boris Nemtsov, mm-hmm. A famous Russian politician who was killed on a red square in front of Kremlin. And it was so, I don't even know how to describe my feelings at that moment. Like a man was killed and he sacrificed everything, fighting for truth, I don't know, for democracy, for peace as well. And at that point, I decided I'm not going to give up and I'm going to do everything. So it's a hard choice to be an activist. But it's also sometimes very rewarding because you see when you help people, when you change something, even some tiny things, it's so important.
Well, I think it's fascinating that it was your role as a mother that helped push you into this. Because, yes, of course, you are looking out for your children, for what your children need, for how they can grow and learn and survive in this world. And it was that role, the reality of motherhood, that led you into this space. And then, of course, the death of Boris Nemtsov in 2015. You know, we still think of him. We still remember him here at the Human Rights Foundation. In many ways, a very singular figure, not just in Russia, but even globally, for what he represented and how hard he worked for Russian democracy itself. So that was 2015. You're a mother. You are getting more and more interested in this space and in organizing and pushing back, especially against corruption. When did you end up joining Open Russia itself?
Well, as soon as I saw that the organization is quite active, but it was mostly active in Moscow. They were taking part in different kind of elections, making viral videos, and it was so modern and so so different from what we had already in Russian politics. So I immediately got interested and I wrote them a letter, like, please let me work with you. I want to be your volunteer. And they were not very happy about my letter. You know, they said, we have to have an interview with you and you need to prove us that you can be quite efficient. Mm-hmm. It was like the first time, it's a risk, you know, to be an activist. And at the same time, they say, you need an interview.
Sure.
So I was interviewed and they said, okay, you can be our activist. Yeah. So I created like some community of Open Russia activists in my city. And
this was in Rostov?
In Rostov-on-Don, yeah. It's on the border with Ukraine, southern part of Russia. Police is very angry there. And we were actually the people who saw how the war started in 2014, how it developed, how it influenced Russia. And we had many activities there, like fighting for the quality of public transport, fighting against Putin, fighting for, theater for children, and many things, parks, and so on.
I want to come back to your letter writing at the end, because there was a recent article about that I did want to ask about. But I think it's fascinating that you, again, you just wrote them a letter to Open Russia saying, I would like to work, I would like to contribute. And they say, that's wonderful, but first we need to actually know who you are, get to know you. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure as soon as they did, they welcomed you in. And I have no doubt that you began working immediately. Now, this was 2017 when you began with them?
Yep. In a year, I became a member of Federal Council of Open Russia. So you can imagine I was very active there. Mm-hmm. As soon as I became a member of Open Russia, we were actually planning the campaign Enough of Him about Putin. Mm-hmm. It's like the federal campaign in many regions. So protests with the portrait of Putin and saying enough of him. And the week before the start of this campaign, they said that our organization is undesirable in the country and any of us can be arrested.
So I was going to say, Nastasia, can you tell us about this undesirable organization statute?
I don't understand anything, you know, about it. Like, how can Russian citizens be undesirable for Russian government? Mm-hmm. What does it mean? I didn't understand that time and I don't understand now. But if you are a member of undesirable organization, Open Russia was not even an organization. I mean, it was a movement of people, mm-hmm. not registered anywhere. If you are a member and you are involved somehow in the activities of this organization, you can be first fined, then fined another time, and the third time it's already arrest. And that's actually what happened with me. And it was the first criminal case in Russia under this law of undesirable organizations.
Right. I think it's worth highlighting that this was the very first case of this undesirable organization, which I think folks are maybe generally, outside of Russia, maybe generally aware there is this legislation that allows Putin, that allows those in the Kremlin to specifically target organizations that are opposed to Putin, are opposed to corruption, including Open Russia. But this was, again, the very first case, in many ways, the test case for how effective this legislation could be in targeting democratic activists. Did you know that this label was coming, or did you just wake up one morning and, you know, your colleagues let you know that all of a sudden Open Russia is undesirable in the Kremlin's eyes?
Yeah, we knew it. It happened in April 2017. And I decided I'm not going to stop. Okay, you can do whatever you want. Because I told you, I don't understand what does it mean. How can I be undesirable living in my country? Before Open Russia, several American organizations were called undesirable. Well, I can see the reasons. Okay, yeah, you don't want them to interfere. But it's a Russian movement. So I didn't pay much attention to that. And I got the first fine for debates on local TV with a deputy from United Russia Party. It was so good, you know, because when you are debating, you can tell what you feel and what's true, you know, but they are not able to say what they really think. They need to say what they have to say. And it's so easy to debate with them. It is even funny, you know. But yeah, I was fined for, with like 5,000 rubles first time.
It's enough money. I almost feel bad for that deputy you had to debate. I'm sure he did not do very well against you.
Yeah, it was, you know, a bit unpleasant, I would say, but everybody around sees that the representative of authorities, yeah, of power in the city, he's weak and he can't say what he thinks really. And, and I was in position where you can say whatever you want. But then I got my second fine, and it was for participation again in the seminar. I wanted to take part in elections, and I decided to run for office and in summer. And there was a seminar for such people like me. We were just, you know, sitting in the audience, writing down something, and then police comes and asks, who is Shevchenko? And I was like, okay, that's me. You are fined for the participation in the seminar. Only me.
Only you, of all the people.
Yeah. Yeah, only me, because I was representing Open Russia there. So that's why it's illegal.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, just sitting and keeping silence, writing down the details, doing like nothing dangerous, but it was illegal, and I was fined again. And it was obvious that the next step is arrest.
Yeah. And that was January of 2019. Was that next step, was the arrest?
Yes, they came early in the morning and they showed me this paper about the criminal case against me. Yes, I was really surprised. Actually, you know, I thought they wouldn't do it. They knew I have three children. They knew I have a disabled child. And it's so weird, actually, to arrest me for what? There is no reason. Like, okay, debates, seminar, am I a criminal? But then I realized that it's so, so serious. Every time during court hearings, they told me, you are a threat to the defense capacity of Russian Federation. You are a threat to Russian Constitution. Yeah, so they made it so serious.
Right.
It is a demonstration, you know, for everyone. You should never, ever work with Open Russia.
Of course. And in a way, you know, again, there are mothers all around the country that can see this happening to you and to your family. In a way, it's almost a risky move for them specifically to target you, which makes it maybe even more surprising. Can we talk a little bit, Nastasya, about your family, about your children? You have three children, and your oldest was named Alina. Can you tell us a little bit about Alina?
Yeah, Alina, she was 17 when I was arrested, but actually she was like a baby, you know. She couldn't walk and talk, and I had to feed her, holding in my arms and you know, special position and special food, blended food. So she was just like a baby. And my other daughter, she was 14, and my son just went to school. He was 7. Mm-hmm. So in the week of my arrest, Alina died in the hospital. And we couldn't expect that because she had some lung problems. But usually it was, okay, we go to the hospital and everything helps very quickly. And I'm there with her and it's okay. But this time they brought her to the hospital and she died in one day, very quickly. They said it was bronchitis, but I never heard people die from it in one day. And the problem was they didn't want me to go there to the hospital because I was under house arrest already. And we were trying to convince them. I mean, investigators, they were calling Moscow every time, asking for permission. And only when her heart stopped twice, they made a decision to let me go and see her. And I went to the hospital at night, and the next day she died. I saw her only for like 15 minutes. I was next to her, but she didn't even open her eyes. And that was the end. And I feel really guilty because I was not there and because she didn't understand that I did all my best to come there. Yeah, but it was not easy, you know. Nobody believed me. They said, you are going to the hospital, but you will turn to Ukrainian border and run away.
They couldn't even understand that a mother just wanted to see her daughter. To be there for her daughter.
No, the judge was just smiling, you know, when I said that there was nobody to feed her. And he was just smiling, and that's it. And also, you know, I remember that moment. I'm showing him, like, she needs special food. She's alone. And then I come to the hospital, and there was a nurse telling that nobody changed diapers. She was alone. She didn't have any food during one day because they only have food for, like, children, but not for her.
Now, see, I'm so sorry that you experienced this, and I'm so sorry that Alina is no longer here with us. This was a few years ago now. You carry Alina's memory, you carry Alina's legacy with you every day. I have to imagine you make her proud in all the work that you do. Every single day in carrying that legacy forward. Let me actually ask you about that. What is her legacy? How does her memory, how does your relationship with her propel you? How does that continue to motivate you in your work? And we can talk a little bit more about your work here in a moment, but how does that legacy continue to affect you?
So the film that you mentioned, the documentary Anastasia, it's actually about the story how we go to the Black Sea to scatter the ashes of Alina and to say goodbye to her. And every time I watch the film, and I've watched it many, many times, there is her face on a big screen, like she's alive again with me, and it's so important. And people trust you in an instance with when they see how honest you are with them, and you see they know your story. And I tell the story of many others, many other political activists who are separated with their children, how much children suffer, like Alexei Navalny's children will never see him again. Vladimir Karamazov's children are growing up without him. He's arrested for 25 years, mm-hmm. for God knows what. And there are more and more stories like that. So my goal is to tell about resistance inside the country because not many people know about it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, nowadays we see that children from Ukraine suffer from this regime even more. They are killed, they are kidnapped, they are separated with families where you live without fathers. And there is so much pain in all of it. So I see my mission to tell about it and to help children to get united with families. That's why I'm still volunteering and helping political prisoners and war prisoners as well. Mm-hmm.
Because often the children have no one to speak for themselves. They have no voices themselves, no audiences, certainly, to reach. You can help amplify, you can help not only those voices, but again, restore these families and reunite these families themselves. Nasir, I know you mentioned, you know, the house arrest in 2019, you know, you left Russia in 2022, obviously the expanded invasion in early 2022 itself. What have you been doing since moving to Vilnius? I know you've been leading also a letter writing campaign. It sounds like just hundreds of letters. I don't know where you find the time to write all of these letters. Your hand must be incredibly sore from writing all of these it's to political prisoners as well as to wives and mothers of soldiers, or is it just to the political prisoners themselves?
Political prisoners, war prisoners, and their families. Mm-hmm. Because I know how important it is. You know, when I was under house arrest, I got about 10 kilos of postcards from different countries, a lot, you know, from children, from elderly people in different languages. Mm-hmm. And it was such a huge support for me and for my family, because whenever they say you, every time you are a criminal, you are dangerous, you are undesirable, and then you read it and realize that there is a lot of support in the world and you are actually not that bad. And that's why I decided that I should help somehow those who are in Russian prisons. Thousands of people. We can't reach out to all of them, unfortunately, but to hundreds of them easily. You will be surprised how comfortable this service is in Russia to write letters to prisoners. So you just go on a website, write it, type the mail, and they get it the next day. Yeah. And you can get the reply very quickly. You can send photos. You can send news, so it's a communication. And I see how important it is now, because sometimes we get news from political prisoners, like I have, I don't know, a toothache, and I'm just in a very bad condition. I call like any kind of help, please do something. And we are campaigning on social media, or I am writing to Russian authorities, like, what are you doing? And there were multiple cases when we found the information immediately from political prisoners. I would like to say more about war prisoners. They are even in worse conditions because they are starving. They don't have food. They are tortured. To provide them this communication with families, you can imagine how many words of gratitude I get every time when mother finally, after 2 years, gets a message from her son. I am a mom and I do feel their pain, you know. This is so, so heartbreaking. And, you know, I would also like to help mothers of Russian military men who are imprisoned in Ukraine to finally get this communication, because I think mothers one day can stop the war, because there is no nationality. I mean, about mothers' pain, you know, and grief. Mm-hmm. There is no nationality, no borders. It's mm-hmm. grief, and it's something everybody can feel.
And committees of mothers, of soldiers and of servicemen, certainly in wars past, have played an incredible role in not only amplifying their plight and the plight of the soldiers themselves, but even in ending wars as well. So in terms of, again, potential future avenues for activism, for protests, for movements inside of Russia about ending this war, that's certainly a, you know, a fertile topic, certainly a potential area. And it sounds like, Nastasia, you are, again, you're speaking with these mothers, you're reuniting them with their children. I cannot imagine the weight that is lifted from their shoulders when they hear from their son, hear from their child, or for that young man, basically a boy who's in prison, who finally hears from his mother. Again, I cannot imagine the relief that they feel. And of course, you hear from them directly. That must be rewarding for you, right?
It is very rewarding. And when people ask me, where do you find motivation to keep fighting? I'm not actually looking for motivation, because when you realize how many children and people suffer in prison, you just can't stop resisting. You need to do everything you can. You know, there is so much hate, unfortunately, in my country. That's why I think women and female leadership is very important, mm-hmm. because it's more about love, and mm-hmm. we need somebody to take care of this, not to punish them constantly, yep. you know, but finally to show that you are desirable, not undesirable. And the same is about fake. The whole country is about fakes, and children do feel it. Yeah. They want you to sound sincere and honest, and as soon as they hear it, they are somewhere next to you and they trust you. And I have many stories actually to tell about children from Russia who call me and text me very often. They are sometimes beaten by their parents because of their anti-war position, and they have now no one to come right. and to complain, and they are looking for any kind of support. To find this propaganda and to fight this hate, we need women in politics.
Absolutely. You know, one of the themes of this podcast, Nastya, is that when regimes target dissidents, target activists, target opposition figures, often, not always, but certainly often, what they end up doing is creating even more motivation, but what they end up doing is amplifying that voice that they tried to silence, or that movement they tried to dismantle, or the opposition that they tried to take apart. What they're doing is counterproductive, maybe not immediately, but certainly in the months and the years to come. And what it sounds like for you, Nastasia, is that they targeted you, they tried to silence you, separate you from your family, and here you are years later, and you are reaching hundreds, you are reaching thousands more Russians, Russian citizens, Russian mothers, than you would have otherwise. I don't know if I'll ever speak to any of these officials who put you under arrest, but I have to imagine, I would like to think that they are maybe a little frustrated that what they ended up doing was creating an even more powerful voice, an even more powerful force and movement than they initially targeted back in 2017 or in 2019.
And I still remember one phrase when I was arrested. A policeman told me, "We are creating a new Nelson Mandela out of you." And I was like, "Why Mandela?" They know it all, you know. They see how they changed my life. Mm-hmm. And another thing I would like to mention is that I'm trying to see good in people. And even these investigators and police officers around me, I think they can support anyone if they feel that Putin is weak. Yeah. And there is something human in them as well.
Yeah.
Like they were showing me the photos of their kittens or telling me stories about their, I don't know, family trips, to sound human. And we even got friends with one of inspectors. He came to our apartment to check me like every day, and my cat was sleeping in his boots usually. And he decided to buy the same cat, and he was studying zoo psychology.
Oh, interesting.
And telling me lots of stories about his cat.
Yeah.
And he knew I have a lack of fresh air, and usually he parked his car far from the building of the court so we could walk and I could breathe.
Yeah.
And these small steps, they made us closer. But unfortunately, he died because of coronavirus.
I'm sorry. Well, Nastya, hopefully very soon, you will be back in Rostov, and the most important conversations you will be having are about the cats, the dogs, and the pets of all of those around you.
I don't believe it. I think we have so much to do, you know, to fix everything what Putin did.
Well, certainly it's one
step. It's going to take years, yeah.
Yeah, one step, one letter, one conversation at a time. I think what you just mentioned a moment ago is that so many of these, whether it's in the security services or even just kind of general officials, maybe outwardly the support for Putin is there, but we have all seen how quickly these regimes can crumble. And especially for a figure like Putin and all of the forces that are certainly not going his way, whether it's economic, even the war in Ukraine itself, to say nothing of the rising generation that is in many cases sick and tired of his leadership, we see how quickly these things can fall apart. And again, whether it's figures like Mandela or other democratizers who can come in and lead their countries to a brighter and certainly far more beautiful future, that kind of beautiful Russia that many of us are hoping for. Nastya, maybe as a final question, how can people support your work? How can they build upon your work? How can they also participate in maybe writing letters or helping reunite families, whatever it is? What are some things that folks who are listening to this podcast can do on their end?
Now, we've been campaigning for illegitimacy of Vladimir Putin for the last months with all diasporas, Russian diasporas in the world, in the U.S., including U.S. Why it is important for me? We all know he is a criminal. He is arrested by international court. He kidnaps children. He kills people. He is responsible for the death of my daughter. It is all illegal. How can we call him a legitimate president of my country? We have no fair election. The elections were held on occupied territories. But some world leaders keep pretending that it's all good, it's all okay, keep working with him as a president. For me, it is crucial. If we want to be honest, our children are looking at us. Mm-hmm. We should stop calling him a legitimate president. If we want to create a crack in Russian elites that can actually can help us to stop war, we should do everything possible not to recognize him legitimate president. So we have a petition on change.org, and you can find it by hashtag legitimate. It is translated into 20 languages. You can choose any language and sign it. This is important now. In 2014, everybody was indifferent to what happened in Ukraine. We should stop being indifferent. We should care, and finally say that black is black, white is white, and he is not a legitimate president of my country.
Well, Nastya, we can leave a link to that petition in the show notes for this podcast so folks can find it there, as well as a link to the trailer for the documentary on you and your family as well in the show notes. Actually, Nastya, is there a way for listeners or anyone to watch the documentary online? What's the easiest way?
Yeah. It is available on Paramount Plus.
Wonderful. So we can leave a link in the show notes for that as well. Nastya, this has been a wonderful conversation. I can't thank you enough again, not only for speaking with me today, for joining us here at the Human Rights Foundation, but for everything you do, everything you keep doing. Certainly, I have experienced personally that you never want to make your mother mad. And I have to imagine that that is what many in those in Russia are thinking. They realized just how mad they made one mother and what effect that can have, not only on a country, but on an entire world at this point. And we look forward to seeing you soon, hopefully either in New York or in Vilnius, and to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you so much.
The Human Rights Foundation is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that promotes and protects human rights globally, with a focus on closed societies. We promote freedom where it's most at risk, in countries ruled by authoritarian regimes.